Coming in wounded.
Podcasting's a contact sport.
Yeah, it's rough out here for a potter, a caster.
But I know, Jay, you're a trooper. You're going to fight through it for the listeners.
That's right.
Because we love them.
Rub a little dirt on it. That's what they used to say back in junior high football. Rub a little dirt on it.
Rub a little dirt on it.
If the bone ain't showing, don't hurt. That's what our coach would say.
That is a wrong
Tiger Woods can't say that, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
He had a lot of bones showing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His leg was completely shattered.
Oh, I didn't hear about what happened to him.
He might not even walk again.
I knew that he got in a bad rollover, but I didn't hear about the extent of his injuries.
I don't think he'll be back playing golf anytime soon.
Yeah, his career's probably over.
But, you know, he's alive, so...
Yeah, and he wasn't drunk, so he's got that going for
him. Yeah, that was what I was thinking, was like, was he drunk or high? But apparently he just got done playing with D-Wade, and it was just one of those things. But...
Probably on getting sexted nudes.
But, yeah, on that
from,
note...
From Perkins waitresses.
On that note, welcome back to the Current Waves podcast. We all are here, legs intact, no compound fractures. I'm one of your hosts, Ben, with my lovely co-hosts, Ethan, Jay, and Jake. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Masalam alaikum.
Not bad. I'm good. I'm doing that. Doing good.
Doing good. Before we get on the podcast tonight's topic, I have a real quick shout out. If you're watching on the YouTube, you can see the turtleneck going. Just want to shoot our thoughts and hearts out to the Van Ornum family of a good friend of ours, Josh Van Ornum. His mother, Teresa Van Ornum, passed this past week, so we're a little delayed getting this episode out. We're spending some time with him, so just wanted to shoot our thoughts out to the family. We're with you. We love you guys. Mark, Patricia, Michaela, the whole family. So just before we get started tonight, wanted to make sure I mentioned that. And, rest in peace, Teresa. So,
rest in peace. So much love to you guys.
Yeah, positive love and energy.
No doubt. But tonight we've got a fun topic. A city with no planning, no zoning, essentially lawless.
Yes.
Are you talking about Houston, Texas?
The dirty south.
We are not. We are in the far east. A city called the Kowloon Walled City is tonight's topic.
Sounds like the title to a very scary dystopian movie.
Or I was thinking a delicious, shitty Chinese restaurant. Takeout only, of course.
Kind of both those things when you think about it.
Yeah, cool. Real, it is. Cool.
So, known in Cantonese, it was known as the City of Darkness. And I just want to read a quote kind of explaining the city. This is an article from Atlas Obscura, January 6, 2020. The city's many tall, narrow tower blocks were packed tight against each other, so tight as to make the whole place seem like one massive structure. Part architecture, part organism. There was little uniformity of shape, height, or building material. Cast iron balconies lurched against brick annexes and concrete walls. Wiring and cables covered every surface, running vertically from ground level up to the forest of rooftop television aerials, or stretching horizontally like innumerable rolls of dark twine that seemed almost to bind the buildings together. Entering the city meant leaving daylight behind.
Cool.
Sweet. Kind of gives me goosebumps.
Dude, I had never heard of this place, and then we decided we were going to do this, so I obviously Googled it, and the first image you see that pops up is just like, blows your brain up. You're just like, how is that real?
Right?
It looks weird.
It doesn't look real. It looks like a block of cheese or something.
It just stands out so starkly from the rest of its surroundings in Hong Kong as well. It's crazy.
It just looks like something from like a dystopia future. Like Ready Player One, the movie sucked, but it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, The Stacks. I actually just watched that movie recently because I heard it in one of these podcasts doing research for this episode. I was like, better watch it.
That movie made me want to puke. It took me like 4 attempts just to get through it.
If you like video games and anime, you're going to love the movie. You should give it a watch.
The book.
It's just CGI puke on screen with jerking off with nostalgia and pop culture.
It's essentially
I enjoyed the book, but the movie was...
The books. The second essentially one just came out.
A live-action anime directed by Steven Spielberg.
I mean, yeah, I got a terrible shout out my girlfriend, Anna Kaiser, who actually... got me on the topic because she's reading Ready Player 2 currently. So that's kind of how I heard about the topic and how we brought it up to the podcast. So got to give a shout out there. And it's definitely, don't have to watch the whole movie, but if you want a little movie version, check it out. At least check out some YouTube clips. And I'm sure we'll post some stuff on the social of how the city looks. But like us talking about it can only do it so justice. It's like stuff you have to kind of see.
Yeah, you got to look up a video or a picture at least. Do it right now. Pause this. Keep listening, but go do it.
Oh man, this city is just like no other. It's so unique.
Urban hell.
It's straight out of a dystopian futuristic movie like Blade Runner or something like that. It's pretty crazy, and it's like a unicorn when it comes to like the city planning and stuff and how it like basically came to be. People can like study it and stuff because there's like literally nothing like it else in the world, right? How it like formed and became what it is.
And nothing else like it might ever happen again.
True.
Like, this is a once in a lifetime, like conglomeration of scenarios that made this thing happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we might be on our way back to a vertical shanty towns.
Yeah. Let's hope not.
With the way real estate prices are headed.
Well, the claim to fame here for Kowloon-walled City is really that it was the densest human population on Earth. And we'll get into some numbers here a little bit later in the episode, but just keep that in mind. Like, the densest human population on Earth. And Hong Kong itself, where it's situated... is the least affordable housing market in the world. So that can add a little bit of context as well as to how some of this happened. But there's more history and events that led to the birth of the Kowloon-walled city. So let's dive into some of this history.
Let's dive into it. In the way back machine.
Yeah, let's do it. It was the Kowloon-walled city was originally built as a fort during the Song Dynasty, which was between the periods of 960 AD and 1279 AD or ACE, whatever acronym you prefer. And then it was actually taken during the British occupation of Hong Kong by British Imperial forces in 1899. Of course, Ooh. The British have a long history in this region, and, Ooh. You know, it's... pretty shady and sketchy, and we could dive into that,
to say the least.
We could dive into that later, but you can just, you know,
just Google the Opium War.
Yeah, just Google the Opium War and you'll learn all you need to know on
which one.
but once they took it, the British didn't do really a whole lot with it, other than it was kind of a tourist attraction for the the European tourists of Hong Kong, and a place for squatters, people who were like destitute at the time. And on a map in 1915, the city was simply labeled Chinese Town, which is like the most like colonial bullshit I've ever fucking heard.
Yeah, it's like, can you not think of anything better than that?
Obviously, someone that had never been there and was just like, well, Chinese Town, let's call it that.
We're gonna call that that.
the British super. Awesome, humorous, full of ingenuity and creativity, but
and mainly pedophilia.
there was like a school and an old people's home that were established there, but the necessary resources to truly establish like a city in its own sense were never really provided, either by the British or the Chinese governments at varying times of the control. And really the British kind of just, sorry, go ahead, Jay.
I was just going to say, like, up until this point, it wasn't really like a town necessarily. It was more of a, like you said, a fort.
An outpost.
There was a few buildings, and then it had an area around it, and people just kind of started living in that area. So nobody really wanted to do anything about it, because, like, I mean, it's not very nice people back when we're talking, so.
in some ways, Jake, I don't know if your cat likes to hop in boxes, but, like, cats will, like, even if there's, like, an outline on the floor, will just, like, feel like they'll, like, just go into that space just to sit in there. And I kind of feel like that's how it started. Like, it just had these, like, broad, like, outlines of an outpost, and people are like, that's a space. I should live there. Let's go.
It's like, there's a wall here to hide behind, like, the strong winds. Like, keep me a little drier and warmer.
Are you saying squatters are just really large cats?
I mean, your word's not mine, but.
Almost a hot take. And kind of the overarching theme of Kowloon Walled City is it was like always in a state of limbo between control of like the Chinese and the British. If you look at like a map of Hong Kong itself, like Hong Kong proper, is actually an island just like across the harbor to mainland China. But Kowloon was actually on the mainland side, and then the British controlled the island, and then the Chinese technically like controlled Kowloon to some degree. Like it kind of flip-flop back and forth between like overseers, but really right. like realistically it was like kind of caught in the middle, and there was never like true jurisdiction over it.
And this is Republic of China predating the current People's Republic of China. This is before the Chinese Civil War.
I have the wording from the declaration. Is just a little quote here. So it says, quote, "The Chinese officials now stationed there shall continue to exercise jurisdiction, except so far as may be inconsistent with the military requirements for the defense of Hong Kong." So basically, that was the British declaration to the Chinese government saying, like, your military dudes can stay there. They can control this, like, 6-acre plot of land. But we're not going to help you, and it's like you have to take care of this spot. And then nobody took care of it.
It was more or less just like for the Chinese to kind of keep tabs, like keep an eye on what the British were doing,
right,
so to speak.
And in its early days, it was a hot spot for Chinese spies or insurgents to kind of like camp out and escape British authority, because they could just go past these walls and then they're in Chinese territory again, technically.
Well, and the British, as the British Empire was wont to do, they weren't really interested in the welfare of the local population. Were there for to be exploited, basically.
Indeed. And the British, they kind of just were like, screw it, let's just demolish this place. But just in the nick of time, World War II broke out, and the Japanese came in and took control over Hong Kong. And while the Japanese were overseeing Hong Kong, they demolished the walls of the fort and used them to improve the nearby Kai Tak Airport.
Yeah, and I have another quote here from that same Atlas Obscura article, kind of celebrating the anniversary of Kowloon. But in the aftermath of the war, refugees flooded to the South Kowloon Peninsula. The only trace of the old city was a declare it shell of the Mandarin's house. Yet people gravitated almost instinctively to this rough rectangle of ground. Perhaps it was the feng shui. The walled city had originally been laid out according to the ancient principles of Chinese philosophy, facing south and overlooking water, with hills and mountains to the north. This ideal alignment, it was said, brought harmony to all citizens. In their desperate plight, some refugees may have believed that Kowloon would be a much-needed source of luck and prosperity. Others, however, recalled that this had once been a Chinese enclave in British colonial territory. The stone walls of the walled city had gone, but the refugees convinced the diplomatic ones to remain.
Interesting. So,
yeah.
Love the feng shui, though. Gotta have that south facing. Gotta get that direct sunlight overlooking the ocean.
Honestly, if your walled city doesn't have feng shui, is it even a walled city?
And I just really like that quote. We'll kind of get into this later, but I think there's like very differing views on this city. Like, I think depending on your perspective and like how maybe you interacted with the city or how your culture viewed the city, like some people, you know, view it as a positive and of luck and prosperity. Some people view it as a breeding ground for crime and depravity. So, I think that quote was important to point out of just like the differing factors and perspectives on the city, and we'll kind of get onto it more a little bit later.
Indeed, and right after the war, you know, obviously with war, there's always going to be displacement of people, and so this was a place for people that, you know, were displaced during the war to find new opportunity. And, you know, in rural China, which was most of China at this time, was rural areas, if you were affected by, you know, famine and drought and the atrocities of war, like Hong Kong is a place of opportunity, and this is probably the easiest point of entry to get in there and maybe get with a bit of luck and some hard work, like form a fortune. So in 1947, there was roughly about 2,000 squatters that had started camping in Kowloon, which we'll only see that number completely skyrocket as we continue through the episode. But right, it's pretty crazy what comes of it from 47 to like 87 in like 40 years.
Yeah, appalled by the conditions, Hong Kong authorities planned to remove squatters and demolish the slums. But the residents continued to resist, and by 48, the Hong Kong government settled on a policy of non-intervention. No tax, regulation of business, health or planning systems, or police presence. A new urban settlement was flourishing and led to the rise of Kowloon to how we know it today.
It's a libertarian freedom paradise. Especially for those guys. There's a Facebook group called Libertarian Guys with Asian Wives. I think they would love that place. God.
How do you know about these things?
Right?
I'm way too online.
Yeah. Off your phone.
But
man,
I am not a libertarian window guy, nor do I have an Asian wife, so I'm not part of the group. I've just seen screenshots of it.
All right.
The implications aren't good, though, of libertarian guys and the history of Asian wives.
All right, bringing it back in here. So we're post World War II. The British are still, you know, they have a presence in Hong Kong, and the Chinese are, you know, they're trying to get Hong Kong back, but they still don't feel fully comfortable, you know, having an out and out confrontation with the British. Whereas,
well, the British had leased Hong Kong for 99 years.
Correct.
And, what was it, 1908, something like that?
Yeah. I think you're spot on. Oh, wait.
The transfer of sovereignty wouldn't occur until 97.
That's a good point, Jake. We failed to mention the 99-year lease of Hong Kong by the British. That's a key fact that we failed to mention, so thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. I think my little quote was from that 99-year lease.
Nice.
Perhaps.
History.
The little loophole. I don't believe the city was in the agreement. I think that was the outpost was kind of left out of the 99-year agreement, if I remember research correctly.
I think it was right on the fringes.
So
And so that's why there was never really like a true.
Yeah, nobody really cared. They're like, Chinese, is it your job? Is that my job? Like, I don't know. Like, let's just leave it alone. Like, nobody touch it.
Yeah. And from that, we saw Kowloon City become the most insane, dystopian, unique, like, 6 square acres ever in existence. But the Chinese Revolution happens. And, you know, we can get into that in a whole nother episode. But obviously with that, there was a lot of people that were leaving mainland China.
The capitalist swine fleed to the island of Hong Kong and Taiwan.
And yes, they did flee to Hong Kong because, of course, better living conditions and opportunities. And many of these folks ended up in Kowloon City. And this is where kind of the urban settlement really starts to build. And it's just kind of crazy because there was no like city planning. There's no oversight over like regulations of any kind of building of anything, really. So let's just rattle off a few numbers, just kind of paint a picture of what Kowloon City looked like right before its demolition. And then we can talk about some of the living conditions and what it was like living there. So for context here, at the height of Kowloon Walled City, there was roughly 33 to 50,000 is kind of the numbers that were thrown around. We're not too sure 100%, but that's a lot of folks. And then 88...
And this is the size of 4 football fields, so just keep that in your head.
Yes. Like 30 to 50,000 people. 8,800 homes. Obviously, a lot of these were multifamily homes. 1,000 businesses. Businesses were just like thriving in Kowloon Walled City. Like
there was factories.
Oh yeah, you never got to leave.
Small businesses were just crushing it.
It's all a self-contained economy.
And there's no regulation or anything inside the walls, so businesses from outside the walls would actually
make slave labor
or hire factories that are inside the walls so they could avoid health regulations or any sort of regulation.
Or paying people.
Outsourcing. Kind of like what America does with third world countries.
Except it's like in your country.
Yeah, except for it's just localized to one city.
Yeah, it's like Qatar.
This one was the craziest one to me. So population density at the height of Kowloon Walled City, just for context, Manhattan, which is super dense. Like if you've ever been to New York City, Manhattan is roughly 69,000 people per square kilometer. 69,000 people per square mile, which is like roughly 27,000 people per square kilometer. Kowloon Walled City was 1.2 million people per square kilometer.
Yo.
1.2 million people per square kilometer, or 1.9 million people per square mile.
Yeah, that's a lot. I have another little fun fact. It's 182 times the population density of New York City.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So it's like, I think, I can't remember what podcast it was from, but they compared it to every man, woman, and child in Texas moving to New York City, and they still wouldn't be there.
Hey, fix the freaking subway.
They do need to.
My favorite anecdote. Well,
Cuomo's ass might be gone here soon, so maybe they will get somebody that'll fix the subway.
I'm with it. I'm maybe. For it.
Yep, I think so too. But my favorite anecdote was for all those people and all those businesses and all those homes, there was one postman.
That guy was everybody's favorite guy.
That guy, man, Kevin Costner.
There were only 2 elevators in the entire city, and the postman, instead of climbing ladders, would often just like jump from rooftop to rooftop because it was easier, and he couldn't get his job done in a day if he like actually took the time to travel safely. So like, homie was just building hopping, parkour.
He invented parkour.
Parkour.
Yeah, I was literally just gonna say that. This one postman invented parkour.
But like, think about this. Like, it was just a complete labyrinth. And this dude could navigate the whole thing. Like, probably had the best general knowledge of the, like, whole layout of the city. Could just get anywhere. Knew where all the people lived. Like, knew all the little, like, shortcuts, walkways, like, all kinds of
stuff.
Well,
you can imagine that kind of knowledge would be very valuable to certain types who need to sneak things in and out of places.
Indeed.
So can you imagine? I'm sure he could fetch a pretty penny for his services.
Can you imagine the first day on the job as that postman? You probably are trapped in that place for a week.
I'm assuming just he was probably an insider that lived there and had some general lifestyle knowledge of the place, hopefully, beforehand.
How can you be sure, though?
I mean, the other thing to point out here is this guy wasn't, like, a city official postman. Like, he was just a guy that lived in Kowloon-walled City that just, like, decided he was going to take this on.
Yeah, and this is, like, became, escape, like, from New York.
Became the guy that just delivered people's packages.
An entrepreneur.
Which it's was, like
many
everything.
People in Kowloon, yeah.
Yeah, like, everything ran internally. Like, there was no oversight or any outside influence from the Chinese or British governments. And so it was just all completely run internally, mostly by the Chinese triad. By, like, the 1950s, the triad had moved in, and they were kind of, like, keeping general control over it. But
yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, it's like this, it's like Escape from New York, controlled by the Duke of New York, A number one.
Indeed, yes. I think it was roughly around, like, the 70s when, like, the uncontrollable buildings really started, because they had, like, run out of land, and so they just started going upwards like crazy, making just building on top of other existing buildings, and
they're ahead of the curve. Hong Kong's that way now, and they were doing it 30 years before.
Yeah, and like the electricity was generally like siphoned off of the grid,
stolen.
Yeah, like the wires were all like run around like externally because they could like mitigate fires better that way, and then like someone would tap into the grid, so they like have a new wire they'd lay down, like tap into the grid somewhere just outside the walled city, and then the like electrical supply company of Hong Kong would like find out and shut it down. So then they just run out and do another line, tap it into another place, and like that's why there was just so many wires just stacked up over and over on top of each other, because they just kept siphoning electricity off of the grid.
Praxis.
It's crazy.
Only suckers pay for critical utilities.
And then in terms of like plumbing, like sewage and water, like obviously you got to have that with that many people in the walled city. There was 77 wells inside the city, some of them up to 90 meters deep. And then electric pumps delivered water to big tanks all the way at the rooftop. And from there, the water was just gravity fed down into all the homes. And a lot of the pictures and videos that exist now of like when you're walking through the walled city is just like you're kind of in these little tight, like dark, dank, moist, like moldy, mildewy catwalks and walkways and stuff that just like all along the bottoms and the floors, just like this dark, like brackish, murky water, and you're just like, what is that? I don't know.
It's just like it's dripping on you from the ceilings. It's coming from everywhere. They said people would walk around the halls with umbrellas, yes, just so they could avoid the sludge that was falling from the ceiling. It's like nice. It sounds like a nice place.
Oh man.
But it was cheap.
Super
it was
cheap.
Cheap. It was so cheap that you could rent an apartment in the city for just $5 a month, $5 American a month. A month. Granted, it was usually 10 by 10 meters, but, you know, $5.
It's $5.
It's $5.
$5.
Short commute to work every day.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, you know, businesses were literally in the home. The front of your house, the front of your like house or home was your storefront, and then the back was your living quarters. So a lot of it like was just all kind of intertwined. And speaking of businesses, let's talk about the food service industry of Kowloon-walled City. Like Chinese foods, world famous, amazing, delicious, well Kowloon Walled City had some of the best food in Hong Kong, according to the residents and the people of the city. You go to
Cantonese.
Yeah, you go there, get some noodles, get some freaking Peking duck, chicken. Oh. And the best thing about it is, because the Walled City was kind of like known as being not super sanitary with so many people living on top of each other and like refrigeration kind of being difficult with, you know, electricity being spotty, they just kill the animal right in front of you to prove that it was fresh. And then they just cook it up and meal, dinner served.
That's hardcore.
Dinner and because a show. Of that,
and because of that lack of sanitation, it was super, super cheap.
Yeah.
Like you could get a plate of dumplings. It's not called dumplings. It's called something else. But looks like dumplings for, I think it said a penny. You could get a freaking thing of dumplings. I would love that.
And even like a lot of the high class restaurants within Hong Kong would just, like we said, outsource. See, they need some fish balls, they need some appetizers, like they'll just bring them in. So even when you were paying top dollar in Hong Kong, you were probably eating the same shit.
Yeah,
right.
They just did it right. Those people were grinders. They were working hard. Like they were super, like tons of ingenuity, tons of like business acumen and creativity. Like I saw a video of a guy who was literally making like the rubber heads of plungers, like manually making them himself in his little storefront. And like that was his business. It's like he found one little thing that he could manufacture and he just would make those things. And I bet he probably could manufacture them for like cents on the dollar. Like he'd make it for 3 cents and sell it for a buck. That's pretty good profit. So
yeah, that margin is healthy.
Yeah. So it's just stuff like that. Like they just found a way. Like there's tons of different manufacturing enterprises and stuff that were in there. And like the thing that everybody, once you kind of do a little bit of research into Kowloon Walled City, the only thing you really hear about the businesses is the unlicensed dentist industry.
Here's the thing. This really tells you all you need to know about the British, because they're supposedly one of the richest and most sophisticated societies on earth. Awful teeth, terrible dental hygiene. These people live in a vertical shanty town, and they have more dentists than the entire British Empire does.
Preach.
Licensed or not.
Yeah, I think that's just an indictment on the British culture. It's not for a lack of resources, that's for sure. But for whatever reason, just tons of dentists with like slow speed drills and didn't go to dental school, don't have any like medical background, no sanitation practices. Just
from my research, it sounds like a lot of, maybe not a lot, but some of these dentists were licensed with the Chinese government, but they couldn't get their license with the British government because they couldn't speak the language or whatever.
British don't have dental licenses because they don't have dentists.
They still had to go to Kowloon City because they couldn't get their doctor's license to practice dentistry.
Good point.
In the city. So you could still find your good dentist, good cheap dentist. He could still might know what he's doing. You just gotta get
lucky
with
some good
your
opium
pick.
To kill the pain.
Yeah,
there was lots of good opium.
Well, yeah, I guess we can jump right into the crime and vices.
Why not?
That's a great tangent.
That's what we're all here for.
So once again, the triad, which are like the mafia in China. They kind of took control over Kowloon Walled City in the 50s. And basically, they just kind of oversaw everything. Got a little cut here and there. Obviously did their dealings with, you know, security for people. And drug trafficking, prostitution, all that stuff. And because of that, Kowloon Walled City was known as like kind of a safe haven for people who wanted to get away and indulge in, you know, their vices. So tons of opium houses, tons of brothels, lots of drugs, because the police don't go in there. They don't go into the Walled City.
Yeah. Not to give the triads a whole heaps of credit here, but they did also provide some sort of services for the people living there. They paid people's pensions that worked there. They were the firefighters and the police force within the city. They paid, like, took people's rent for people that were staying there for some amount of time or long periods of time. Like, they were the governors of the city, you could say.
Yeah.
Just maybe not very good ones.
I mean,
they also liked bad stuff.
They just prioritized cool. other aspects of society comparative to other governing bodies.
You know, the firefighting and the, like, paying people's pensions.
It was a very live and let
four
live
or five on the list.
Kind of.
I mean, they sound like better governors than one Pete Ricketts. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Honestly,
yes.
Freak Pete Ricketts. Freak Pete Ricketts.
Frick
Ricketts.
Dude.
He killed my grandma, so he's got blood on his hands, too.
Oh, I wasn't laughing at that comment. I was laughing at my wife. That's terrible.
But yeah. I thought it was even interesting. Like, we think of the triads as kind of like a singular gang, right? But, like, even within the city of, like, as big of four football fields, there was five major triad gangs that were, like, running shit. So, like, each had, like, less than a football field of territory that they were running and managing. It was the King Yi, Sun Yi Un, the 14K, the Wu Sing Wu, and the Tai Ho Choi. I'm sure I mispronounced some of those. But, like, even to have five different gangs running this place, like, that blew my mind, that little anecdote alone.
It yeah. just shows you the power of feng shui and the peace that it can bring people when five triads are working together in harmony.
You just have a bunch of people showing up for the prostitutes and the opium, and they're just like, I'm just here for the feng shui.
Like, oh, this shit.
Yeah,
mountains
man.
To the north, water to the south, baby.
There That's was right. so many heroin dealers, like, within the walled city, like, they were basically untouchable, so people, like, would come in, they'd get their drugs, and then the police, once they left, would actually, like, arrest them, but, like, if you stayed within the walled city, that was, like, you were safe. Like, the police would not go in, because they knew if they went in there, they might not make it back out. Like, it wasn't yeah. that dangerous for most people, but if you were a police officer entering the walled city, it was very, like, known, don't go in there.
So it's like Purdue Pharma in the U.S. Justice Department.
Jake's got all the fire comparisons to U.S. modern society today.
Just untouchable.
Well, I think Jay highlighted a good point in bringing up some of the more beneficial aspects of what the triad were doing. There, not only was there just, you know, drugs and prostitutes and vice and crime, like,
which there was a lot of.
There was, but probably not
as there is anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, comparatively, and probably not that much different than what we would expect in any other given city.
That's true.
But
it was just openly accepted.
Yeah,
for the most part.
Yes, and you know, on the other side of that, like, there was a quality of life that, like, was built from living within here. Like, there was several schools and kindergartens. There was, like, there was organizations similar to, like, the Salvation Army for people who were struggling and needed assistance and support. And they even had, like, an old folks home. Like, I think we mentioned that a little earlier, for people that need, like, assisted living. So it was like there was a society within there. It was very live and let live. People were, like, living very close to each other, and with that breeds kind of, like, a understanding of other people's needs, like an empathy of, like, what other people are going to. Like, when inevitably when you're around people and interacting with them, like, you're connecting to some degree. So
anarcho-primitivism.
Yeah, kind of.
And I mean, especially in that type of environment where your house could be breaking down, or you could lose electricity, or your pipes break. Like, you rely on your neighbors a lot because your neighbors could be affected by those same problems just as you're being affected by them, you know? So,
yes. And
community.
Then, kind of dealing with, like, the sanitation side of it. We did talk a little bit about, like, the plumbing and stuff. Obviously, like Jay mentioned, the umbrellas, because things are kind of just dripping and falling and
oozing.
On, other than just like the bodily functions, there's also trash. You know, people are creating and needing to dispose of trash, and there was just like, for whatever reason, this weird practice of not taking like your trash out and throwing it away or anything. It was literally just like you threw it out your window. Like, in, if you look at like an aerial view down on the top of the walled city, the actual, like, the old monastery at the center of the fort, like, that was still there. And so they built all of the like more modern structures around it, but down in that was like a center courtyard. And it got so bad that so many people were throwing trash like down into the courtyard that they covered the old monastery with like a net. And so after they did that, people didn't stop throwing trash. They still kept throwing trash, and then it just like sat on this net, and it's like trash, like wrappers and stuff. And apparently when you, like, it was like sunny out, you'd stand down in like the courtyard, and it was just this really like weird ambiance because the sun's coming through the trash, and it's like different colors from different like bottles.
Is this
and
the
wrappers.
Walled City or our college frat house?
They operate very similarly.
Yeah, honestly.
So it was just kind of one of those things. And then, of course, you know, where there's a lot of people, there are people that do pass away. And most of the time, there wasn't like a morgue service or anything. Like, if you had a person that you lived with that passed away, they would place them in the restroom area of the home until they could basically find a way to have a proper burial or like a cremation or, you know, other means of disposing of
sky burial.
But most families really couldn't afford the cost of like a proper funeral, burial, cremation, so they would just have to put the body in their bathroom so they could find another means of disposal.
My God.
Just bathing with grandma.
Jesus Christ.
Dead grandma.
But all in all, largely, like, most folks that lived in the city, like, didn't have a bad experience. It seemed like it was a pretty positive place to live. Like, there was camaraderie. There was, like, fellowship. You could do what you wanted to do. You could, if you wanted to work hard and make plunger heads, you could work hard and make plunger heads, and you didn't have anybody micromanaging you, taxing you, regulating you. Like, it was very just.
What
like
if you
free.
Didn't want to work hard and just do heroin?
You could do that.
That
too.
That was cool too. That was cool too. If you wanted to hit up the brothels, nobody's gonna judge you. Like, yeah, man, it was just do what you do. You.
I heard like one interviewer said that like. Or one person who was being interviewed in one of the documentaries, she was like an older woman, but she said like there was a lot of older prostitutes that lived within the Wall City for whatever reason, like older women, like in their 40s, 50s, 60s, that were like,
well, they can't be streetwalkers when they get to advanced age. It's too dangerous.
And I guess just like a lot of the older gentlemen in the Hong Kong area that were just looking for companionship would go to the Walled City and stay with some very elderly prostitutes.
You know,
the world should have more of that. Works, honestly, you know, loneliness among the elderly is a big problem, that's and true. That could help solve it.
Loneliness right now is a big problem for everybody, I feel like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think about in a lot of ways, like hearing some of the interviewers and the researchers of. Like, they talked about it with such admiration. Like, it's such an example of human persistence and like, the ability to overcome adversity and, like, just making things work. Like, I think, like, a lot of people just talk about, you know, like, yeah, there was a lot of bad things about the city. It was unsanitary. But just, like, that aspect of, you know, true freedom, of true, you know, like, it, the world is your oyster. Like, whatever you're going to make out of this life is available for you here. And like, to a lot of people, especially in Eastern culture, like that's really beautiful. Like that's a really beautiful concept and idea. And in a lot of ways, like kind of helps shape the modern Hong Kong that we know today too. Like just having that, entrepreneurial freedom. And that was really cool to me.
Yeah. It was like, if you had to go pick somewhere, I guess, if you lived anywhere near Hong Kong and you're just like, screw it, we're going to the Walled City, I'm gonna roll the dice and see if I can, you know, I've got like $6 in my pocket, I can get 1 month's rent and like invest in the other dollar into something else and try and build a business.
Some dental work, yeah. And a beach.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more of like the entrepreneurial spirit point that Ethan was making, but yeah, I guess if you want to do that, you could do that too. The consumerism side's great. There's stuff to do.
You know, you got to clear your head before you can't get on the entrepreneurial spirit.
All right, bring us home.
Yep, so, you know, as with all great things, this has an ending point. So
the NIMBYs get involved.
Yes, unfortunately. So at 9:20 a.m. on January 14th, 1987, 400 officials from the Hong Kong Housing Department erected cordons around the 83 streets and alleys leading into and out of the walled city. Then they entered the city on a mission to contact and survey every single resident. Earlier that morning, it had been announced that the city was to be cleared out and redeveloped as a public park, just as the Hong Kong government had intended over a half century before. Except this time, there was to be no Chinese resistance. 2 years earlier, on December 19th, 1984, the governments of China and Great Britain had signed a joint declaration to transfer sovereignty of Hong Kong back to China on July 1st, 1997. The Chinese Foreign Ministry had always used Kowloon as a political pawn to remind the British of the world and the world of their claim over the land granted to Britain in 1898. The 99 years were almost up. So they put together a $2.67 billion dollar compensation program was established for the residents and business owners. On average, residents received a nice little check, about $380,000 in U.S. currency for their individual flats. Not bad for a 10 by 10 space that, you know, your dead grandma was sitting in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good. That's good cash.
Probably come up for a lot of them.
For sure. But by November 19th. I mean,
that's a hell of a lot more than we give to people here in the U.S. here in Denver. The cops continue to clear homeless encampments and throw away everybody's possessions, and the only thing they get is just kicked out back on the street now with no shelter or any other possessions they had.
Thanks, America.
Fuck you. Thanks, Jared Denver. Polis and Michael Hancock.
Yeah, it's a similar scenario here
and DPD
in LA, so whew. All right.
Yeah, so for all, you know, at least there was some compensation for even destroying this people's homes. At least they tried to, you know, at least compensate somehow. But in November 1991, just over 450 households were still to agree to terms. And, you know, similar situations as we just talked about in Denver, LA, happened. In July of the following year, riot police entered the city to remove the last remaining residents. And on March 23rd, 1993, the first wrecking ball smashed into the city and signified the downfall of Kowloon.
And the rise of gentrification in Hong Kong.
Yeah, it took almost exactly a full year to fully reduce the city to dust and rubble. So, yeah. You know, just almost a kind of a testament to the structural integrity. Like, even though buildings were like leaning against each other, like it still took them a full year to fully demolish the city. And, you know, maybe some of that was getting the trash from the net and things like that. But, you know, still, I mean, the city, like its residents, in a way, resisted to the very bitter end.
Yeah.
I mean, 8,800 buildings and a 6-acre plot of land is like, that's a lot of shit to get rid of.
Yeah, just like, thinking how many trucks it took to haul that all away.
Right? Knocking down a couple buildings is a lot of shit to remove.
I heard that one of the interviews I listened to was he was a grad student, like an architectural grad student at the time that they demolished this, and that was like his big thesis was like how Kowloon City became like what it was. And so he said that when they did the demolishing, they decided to do like natural like wrecking ball, like piece by piece demolition instead of just like blowing it up and letting it completely fall down. So they could kind of like study it. So they would like cut into it and dissect it and stuff. And like they studied the actual like structure and stuff to gain better understanding of how like basically how things just will happen if they're left alone. Like, what happens to a human population if it just is left alone with no oversight and left to its own devices? So that, I thought that was pretty interesting that they did that.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, like, this, something like this is never going to happen again, most likely, hopefully. So if you didn't take the chance to
hopefully
study,
not.
Like, what a waste that would be.
And I think, you know, getting kind of to the legacy, really, as I said before, the legacy varies drastically between who you ask. It's been romanticized in many instances throughout pop culture. I think probably the most famous is the movie Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, yeah. That movie rules.
Iconic scene. It was in Crime Story, in 1993 movie with Jackie Chan. I have not seen Crime Story. I don't know about you guys.
I haven't either.
I haven't seen it,
but it's very well reviewed.
And I know it's got some badass Jackie Chan stunts, because you just mentioned like the postal guy doing parkour through Kowloon-walled city. Like, imagine what Jackie Chan's doing in a set based on Kowloon-walled city.
I know in the movie he like ran through the city as buildings were blowing up, and they like actually demolished some of the buildings while he was doing his stunts for the movie. So they just kind of knocked two birds out with one stone.
Whoa. Cool.
Low production costs.
I think some of the listeners may be fans of Call of Duty Black Ops 2001 video game. It was featured in that.
Yeah, I remember
I remember that.
Playing the level, not knowing what it was or if it was the real place or anything, and then doing this research, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I remember that. That was definitely in that video game.
Yeah, definitely. I want to go back and play that game now. Another fun tidbit I got right before recording is the Gotham City Narrows in Batman Begins, directed by Christopher Nolan, was inspired by the Kowloon-walled city.
Nice.
So that's kind of cool.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool stuff.
Love Nolan.
And there's also a theme park in Japan modeled after the walled city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
really want to go there sometime. I want to go to Japan in general, but if I go and that's still there, I'm going to visit for sure.
And in true Japanese fashion, it's like meticulously done to like the most finite details. Like some guy who like lived at the city had like taken a picture of some part of the city that was right outside his apartment, and he took like a picture and like posted like it on the internet, and apparently whoever built this like saw the picture on the internet and literally took the graffiti of what he took a picture of and just like recreated it. So when he went and visited this theme park, he's like, holy shit, this is the graffiti that was right outside my freaking door when I lived there.
Yeah, they got so meticulous with it. I'm pretty sure they even got like some trash and old clothes from the destruction of the city and put it in the freaking recreation. So
is there rides or is it just...
It's like an arcade, I think.
It's an arcade, and they just dedicated like a bunch of the building to this recreation of the city.
Yeah, it's like a theme.
It's like an ESPN zone, but for garbage and shanties.
Yes, exactly.
Look out for a future Current Waves 2020, maybe 3 podcast recorded there. You know,
that'd
who
be
knows?
Cool,
right?
The ESPN zone.
Well, yes.
Yeah, Jake, you go to the ESPN.
I don't think it exists anymore,
and we'll be at the Japanese.
But we went to it once when we were kids.
I do remember that. I felt a little underwhelmed, honestly, which is not great.
that was probably late. That was like 2007 or something. So that was like late stage ESPN Zone. It wasn't like mid 90s ESPN Zone. Yeah. You know, it's like Chuck E. Cheese. Chuck E. Cheese is probably pretty depressing nowadays, too.
Have you been to a Chuck E. Cheese lately?
Not since I was probably like 8 years old.
More depressing than you think.
But in many ways, the bustling commerce within the city, its laissez-faire structure, and welcoming nature created the foundation for present-day Hong Kong. For some in Hong Kong, however, the walled city was a shameful problem and a historical quirk they would rather forget. But regardless of how you view the city, the architectural obstacles it overcome to become functional, the refuge it provided to million of residents, and its symbolic nature of resistance and freedom will always make Kowloon City, the walled city, live on in history. So, guys, any last thoughts?
Never forget.
I did want to, I forgot to mention that because of the placement of Kowloon Walled City, because, and we did mention the Kai Tak Airport, which is like Hong Kong's main airport now, they had like to cap off the how high they could build there to keep the planes from like getting in the way of the flight path and stuff.
From literally blasting through buildings. The airport is a half a mile away from the city.
And I think the flight path now like is rerouted a little bit too. Well, it was at the time. Obviously, it's fine now, but they had to like angle a different way and come into the airport like at a different angle to try and avoid being too close to the walled city. There's some cool pictures on the internet you can find of like people on the top, which like the rooftops were pretty cool. I guess there was like pigeon cages and all kinds of stuff up there, like exercise equipment and playgrounds,
a forest of antennas, TV antennas,
men and women sunbathing, and you know,
nice.
That old chestnut.
That's cool.
Yeah. I guess a lot of people would take like a lot of junk up to the rooftops and just abandon them there.
So. Yeah, it's another place to put your trash.
Nice.
Honestly, I just wish I could have gone to visit Kowloon Walled City back in its heyday. Because I've been reading like little Instagram or YouTube comments of people that had gone in to visit, and whether they're telling the truth or not, like, just sounds like it would have been a hell of an experience.
It's like the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Yeah, exactly. The heroin just draws you in.
We did say that they wanted to turn it into a park. We never really touched on that they actually did turn it into a park after they demolished it. So it did become a park. And then, like, it's just like a typical city park now. I guess they did keep like a few original elements of the walled city, like the original like monastery or like administrative building or whatever, and then there's like some cannons and stuff I think that they kept, and then there's like some memorial plaques. But yeah, it's a park now.
I'd love to go visit the park sometime. That'd be cool. Anyways, Kowloon is just like a crazy once in a lifetime like social experiment of this city that just grew from the ground out of nothing, and all these people working together to make this a functional city with businesses and families and problems and a postman. Like
one guy.
It's just an amazing story of, like you said, Ethan, just determination and will. You know, so very cool. I want to go back in my way, way back machine and go in person.
Just design a VR maze for it or of it.
Not very difficult. Cool. I'm sure you can do that in a couple hours.
Yeah, the thing that stuck out to me, Jay, and I'm glad you said social experiment, because the thing that I couldn't stop thinking about was kind of, and maybe this is like studying philosophy back in the day, but like, the difference between like John Locke and Thomas Hobbes, basically saying Thomas Hobbes said, you know, people are naturally evil and we need society to kind of like rein in the evil nature of people. Whereas John Locke kind of said like people are naturally good and society usually turns people bad. Like, I think to me, this is like the, and I'm an optimist, I'm a very positive person, but like, this is the ultimate example of like John Locke being right. Like, if you leave people up to their own devices, like, we're going to look out for each other. We're going to, it might not be perfect. There might be flaws. There might be, you know, sludge raining down from the ceiling, but like we're going to create a place where like people can thrive and be productive and at least have the opportunity to be happy. And so like, that's what I just couldn't get out of my head, was just like, the camaraderie, and like even in this place that was deeply flawed, there was so much opportunity and happiness, and people had, you know, like people thrived and created this thing out of nothing. Like, that's really the lasting thought that I'll have of this topic, was just kind of, you know, I think really proof that given the opportunity, people are kind of naturally good and they're going to look out for each other. So that's what stuck with me.
Hell yeah.
I agree
when
with
there's
that.
no people to govern or nothing to govern you, people still like have some humanity. It's nice.
I think that's pretty spot on. Obviously a little bit of like rules never hurts anybody, a little bit, just a touch, just to make
that's
sure
what
that
the triads
like
we're there for,
you know, because we're all like we're all human. Like there's times where we just get a little lazy, like cut a corner or something. Like maybe just that like little bit of pressure or whatever you want to call it, the line there that just says no, you just have to meet that part of the line and you're good. Then we don't have sewage and dead bodies in our tubs. But like,
if you're hoarding all the resources, we'll toss your ass off the top of the roof.
Yeah, there you go. But like, yeah, obviously, like too much oversight and too much control and influence by like people is never good. So I like the live and let live style of Kowloon Walled City.
So. Same.
Well, hey. I hope the listeners enjoyed it. You know, Jay, where can they find more content?
Why do I have to fucking do this every time?
Because you're just so good at it, dude. You're the king. Last week we were just like, oh my god, what do we do? Where's Jay?
Well, lucky for you guys, I like it. So go freaking check our website out, www.currentwavespodcast.com. There you can find our Patreon, where we have a buttloads of bonus content for you. You can choose your donation. Clink, clink. We got a couple different subscriptions. If you donate $5 a month, you get all that juicy bonus content. Ooh, you'll get a shout out from us. And what else do we give them? A sticker or something?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Yeah, we'll do that. Go check us out on all our social media. We're on Instagram at Current Waves Podcast, on Facebook at Current Waves Podcast, and on Twitter at Current Waves Pod. If you like the show, go give us a nice review on iTunes, 5 stars if you want. Leave us a comment. It helps us out more than anything, gets us up there, reaches us out to more people, and that's all we want. We just want to talk to more people. Talk at more people.
Connection.
More specifically.
We just want to talk to a whole Kowloon Walled City amount of people.
At least 33,000 people, exactly.
If we were in the Kowloon, we wouldn't even need to post it on the internet. We could just blast it over a PA system and everybody would hear it.
And everybody would love it.
We're at about 33 people right now, so just multiply that by 1,000, we're good to go.
I think you're selling a short, Jay. I think there's at least another 40 people, 80 people in there. You know, who knows?
Excuse me.
And we appreciate every single one of you very much.
That's right. That's right. I love every single one of them. And yeah, that's all the shits. That's all we got.
Love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys and gals and friends and listeners.
Spokojna noche.
Whatever that means. Is that Portuguese?
It's Russian.
Oh, nice. Using the new skills.
85-day streak as of today.